I'm Marcy Howard, and for the next hour, we're going to have a discussion about faith. The mission of About Faith is to gain peace and understanding with one another through answering questions about a variety of faiths. We're not here to debate right or wrong. We are here to gain knowledge and understanding of one another through respectful conversations with faith leaders about their own journey of faith. And so I would like to present our panel tonight. And I want to welcome Ashish from the Hindu Culture Center in Shreveport, to Rabbi Jana from the B'nai Zion Congregation, Pastor Sioni from the First United Methodist Church of Bossier City, to Father Jason, the Holy Nativity of the Lord Mission. And I'm very, very happy that all of you are here with me today. We have a very special show today because we're going to be talking about three different very significant holidays. And they are Passover, which was March the night, Saturday night, the 27th in March. And it went through 7 days later or 8 days later, depending on what group it is. And we have Easter that just happened April 4th. And then we've got Pascha that is coming and Holy Week that's a week before that. And May 2nd, Pascha starts being celebrated. So if it's all right with the panel tonight, I would like for Rabbi, you talk about Passover, and Pastor Sioni, I'd like you to talk about Easter Sunday and what it means for Christians. And then if it's all right with you, Father Jason, I would like you to tell us about Pascha and what it's about and the meaning of it.
I also wanted to talk for a second about the Hindu things that come up now, because I understand that there's a Hindu colorful festival that comes up in the springtime also. So it may not be as religious and biblically oriented, but I'd love to hear about that as well, since we have Brother Ashish here.
Oh, that would be great.
I'll try my best. I'll try my best.
Okay, so right now, let's go ahead and start with the rabbi.
Well, so it's funny because, and I think that we've, Father Jason and I have talked about this before, for anyone who's listened to us before, the word in Hebrew for Passover is Pesach, which I think is where the Pascha comes from. And it's Pasqua or some variation in many languages. Easter is, because it means, and Paschal as in springtime, and it's all connected. And it is a glorious holiday. It is, Passover is potentially the holiday that more Jews celebrate than any other holiday during the year, possibly because you get to hang out with your family. It's there's a ceremony that's kind of based around a meal, which is always good to have. And it's a celebration of being freed from slavery. And what that means, what are the implications? The fact that you were freed from slavery reminds you how to treat other people. Nobody wants to be treated like that. And so it reminds us how to treat other people, and what it reminds us what it means to be free. And it turns out that being free, it means having some responsibilities. And so all of that is included in this. But we do it, we celebrate for a week, and you're supposed to eat matzah, and you're supposed to avoid, I guess, what's the opposite of matzah, which is chametz, which are foods that are grain-based, like wheat-based. So there's no pizza or spaghetti or cereal or things like that. Matzah is a very flat bread. And you will see that it's connected into other faiths as well, to be doing these things. And so it's kind of, I want, you know, the expression about you are what you eat. So some of the fact that we are eating these things to remember the bread of affliction, I can taste what slavery was like, and I will remember. It's inside me. It's part of who I am, to have been freed from slavery and how awesome it was. And starting the second day of Passover, we start counting what's called the Omer in Hebrew, which is actually a sheaf of barley. But we're counting it because it's, every Jewish biblical festival has an historic aspect to it and an agricultural aspect. So the historic has to do with leaving Egypt, but the agricultural is that it's springtime. So we are celebrating a spring harvest. And so we start counting the second day of Passover. And according to the Torah, according to the law, the scriptures, it says 7 times 7 weeks, 49 days. On the 50th day, one of the most glorious things to ever happen to humanity happened when we stood at Sinai and God talked to us and gave us these laws and entered into covenant and set up this really amazing, I'm going to steal Ashish's word about a philosophy, guidelines, a way of life, giving us, putting us in covenant. And that's, so that's where we are. We're somewhere in the middle of that now. We're counting our days.
I like the idea about what you just said about you are what you eat. And that is very important. Can you talk a little bit more about it, please?
Certainly. So you know that in Judaism, there are a lot of things that are considered kosher or not kosher. And so some of the foods we're not allowed to eat according to Torah, according to the scriptures, the five books of Moses. If it has four legs, then we can eat it. If it has, if it chews its cud and has cloven hooves. So pork is not allowed because it does have a cloven hoof, but it doesn't chew its cud. But things like giraffe are kosher. I don't know that I ever need to eat a giraffe, but it's officially kosher. And although if I am what I eat, that might help. That was a joke. But and then if it's fish, it has to have fins and scales. So no crustaceans. If it's birds, essentially birds of prey are not allowed. The ones that like vultures that eat carrion, we're not allowed to do that. But and if it's bugs, there are actually some bugs that are kosher, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't care which ones they are because I have no intention of making a meal out of bugs right now. If I ever had to worry about it, I would. But it does mean that you have to be careful when you eat salad, let's say, and check your leaves to make sure there are no bugs in it, because then you'd be eating something not kosher. So all year long, there's that. And then there's a restriction about eating meat and dairy together. We're not supposed to do that. God said, don't boil your kid in the mother's milk. And it's turned into a, we can talk about that one day. So we don't ever have dairy and meat together. So I have separate silverware and pots and pans in my kitchen that are, that only can touch things with meat, or only can touch things with dairy. I'll never have a meal where it's both at the same time. But I have another set of dishes that are just for Passover alone. So I have the meat Passover and the dairy Passover, and none of that has ever touched anything that was chametz. And it is complicated. And you clean your whole house before Passover. It's kind of a the spring cleaning holiday, unofficially. But we get to be free after all of that is over. And my house would be clean. Crummy. Matzah is a crummy holiday, but there's lots of crumbs everywhere. But other than that, and we can talk about more about Passover at some point. There's a lot of things. But some of the things you mentioned, I am very interested in hearing. So I don't want to do all the talking.
Well, that lead me into the next phase of this, talking about Easter. In our Christian tradition, from our little form of Methodism, and so the significance is tied into what Rabbi was just spoke of, just the sense of being free. The Passover, the resurrection, its original journey is coming from Passover. And so coming to the New Testament, there's this biblical narrative of a story about how the whole freeing, it was free with, they have a particular way that they need to sacrifice a lamb and cook and get ready. And then they were asked to strongly encourage that they have to use blood of the lamb that they prepare and paint it on the door post of the entrance. And so judgment was happening in the city, and so the Passover was a signal to the judgment one to come by. Every house that had blood on each door, he passed the judgment, the angel passed over those houses and go to other homes. And so there was the foundation of the story. Applied to other things. Rabbi, you have something to add?
Yeah, I was going to clarify that happened while we were still in Egypt, and it was right. Part of the last plague. I wasn't sure if it felt a moment like you were talking about Jesus and that was something that happened when Jesus was still alive. And I wanted to point out that's not the way it worked that time. This was the thing that we did when we were in Egypt and the last plague was about to happen, that the firstborn child was about to be killed, and that anybody who had blood on their doorpost, the angel of death would pasach, as in Pesach, he would pass over. And that's how we got the holiday, and that's how we got the name. And that's right. How there's a connection to your holiday.
Right. When Jesus come around as a part of his Jewish heritage, because a part of the message was that they have to pass this story down generation after generation after generation so that they remember. It was a commandment for them. It was a commission. You must tell this story so that you will never forget that Yahweh had done his part of being faithful to messy people. that's who God is. Love these messy people as we are today. And so Jesus grew up learning this in the synagogue about this story. Now, when he came to be in his own mission, Jesus became the sacrificial lamb, as he was from the Old Testament, from the Torah. Jesus then became the sacrificial lamb. And so our Holy Week, it happened a week before leading up to Easter. And so we celebrate Maundy Thursday, and then we celebrate Good Friday. These are names that is being given to this. There's always the young people. My 5 year old asked, "Daddy, why is it Good Friday? Jesus died. Why is that Good Friday?" But because of the root of the story, the Passover, there was death and life. Jesus became a contradiction. His story has always been a contradiction. Because death and life, it happened. It is very, very difficult in the culture, the Western culture, to really understand it. I grew up in a culture, you're born at home, you die at home, death and life come in the same package. Yeah, I have a different appreciation. I'm not quite sure if that's the right word. There is a different understanding. I felt like it's a deeper understanding of the meaning of life and death. You cannot separate those things. And so Good Friday happened leading up to Easter. So 3 days later, our biblical narrative say, you tear down this temple, symbolizing Jesus' body. And he say, I will build this temple in 3 days. Of course, his trusted follower of 12, they didn't understand all of these things. And so resurrection happened on Easter. And those people, very much like everyone else, did not expect Easter to happen. They did not believe Easter would happen because it gave away in the story, as the gospel, full gospel told, they went to the tomb and they did not even recognize Jesus because they expected a dead person. They didn't believe. I mean, because dead people are supposed to be dead. They did not believe that dead people can be alive. Even Jesus have done his part of preparing and teaching and showing them everything. But they just could not comprehend that. And it was just dangerous to believe that, because they going up from their faith against a political system that was overseeing them. The Roman political system was still in power. And so they couldn't really live freely out their faith, the expression of life. And so Easter for the Christian, a little tribe of Christianity, it seems to be our claim is that this is what separates us from all other faith. In a sense, what we are saying is that we, it's the claim that we make And please, 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 forgive me. This is, I just don't know how to say this. I don't know how, because it can be very elitist, exclusive, but this, that is far from it. But we do say in our tradition, we serve a God and we worship a God who is willing to sacrifice himself. It seems to propose that all other gods, it require of its follower to sacrifice themselves in the honor of the God. And it's a very, very social conversation. I think it invites a lot of conversation to that, because there is a lot of education need to happen as this program is set up through get around a good, I mean, because that's what we did on Easter, on Sunday. Trust me, I mean, everybody came and there was humongous meal waiting at home for the whole family to come. And so celebrating freedom, you eat whatever you eat, because when you're in slavery in the Torah, our narrative over there, when you're in slavery, you were told how to do life. You're told when to go to bed, when to wake up, what to wear, how long to work, and all of this. So Torah was given to these people a order for life, a order for living, because they didn't know how to be free. They didn't know. It's like a teenager. They don't know how to be. When you give them freedom, they go banana. They go crazy. I say in my closing of my preaching on Sunday, I say, because there were a lot of young people there, Easter for the Christian faith, especially here in the Methodist, it's like the whole family come. It's like one of those traditional things. Everybody show up. Even in this pandemic, I've been here since July. This place was packed with not the whole, packed, but considering the season where we had a pandemic, we broke what what our covenant had mandated us to do. But what we're going to do? I mean, we make do. Okay, we just make it work because family came. And so Easter is one of those celebrations that the whole family show up. Now, understanding what Easter is all about and what this freedom is required of us, because that's what this whole Easter thing is. I mean, the freedom, the Passover, it give you freedom, but it has responsibility. There are some guardrails to this freedom. And we simply, and I say to young people, I say, please, please, please do not rush to grow up. grown up is overrated. Please do not, don't ruin a good thing. You got everything for free. Now it's paid for, it's given to you. Enjoy now and learn. But that's what Easter in a Christian perspective. It is a celebration of a God who is willing to sacrifice. If so be it, he had to die, he did. And then fulfill what the Torah and all the prophets have foretold before, that there will be a season of such. That the prophet Jesus fulfill all of that. And so we celebrate it to remember the freedom with responsibility.
But there's some scholars who think that the Last Supper that Jesus ate would have been a Passover Seder. Is that something that you know?
Okay. It is.
Marcy,
Father Jason, could you tell us a little bit about the Orthodox view of Pascha?
I can, and the thing I'm going to say is basically going to echo a lot of what Pastor Sione said. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to start in Genesis and go forward, or I'm going to start with John and Charles Wesley in the 18th century and go backwards. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with John and Charles Wesley in the 18th century, okay? And the reason why I'm doing this is I'm trying to get to a point where we can explain why we're both, Pastor Sienna, both of the Christian tradition. He celebrated Easter last Sunday, and I, as an Orthodox Christian, I'm not celebrating Easter or what we call Pascha until May 2nd. Mm. bear with me. We're going to have to take a little journey through history here to set the context. So Pastor Cione is of the Wesleyan tradition, John and Charles Wesley. They come out of the Church of England in the 18th century. Go back a little bit further, that puts you back in the time of the Reformation. The Church of England is formed really by Henry VIII with Latimer, Ridley, and Cranmer were the three main martyrs of, I guess, the Anglican movement at this time, but Cranmer being the Archbishop of Canterbury, the main liturgist for the Church of England. So you step back a little bit further, the Church of England is part of the Roman Catholic tradition. So I guess it's through the time of the Reformation, the early 16th century. If you go back a little bit further, say five centuries, you get to a date, you know, 1054, and that date is what we call the Great Schism. And that's where there was a division between the Bishop of Rome, known as the Pope, and the four Eastern patriarchs, Constantinople, Alexandria, Antioch, and Jerusalem. So there was a difference of opinion over various things, and the church at that time that was unified, really from the time of Pentecost moving forward, is separated. So you have the Church of the East, which becomes known as Orthodox, and the Church of the West, which becomes known as Roman Catholic. So the tradition that Pastor Cione has in the Western or the Latin tradition, as we call it, includes certain things like Maundy Thursday or Ash Wednesday, Maundy Thursday. Then you move into Good Friday, you have Holy Saturday, and then, of course, Sunday, which we would call Easter. So if you go back into that time period between really, say, after Pentecost up until 1054, the Great Schism, you have one church, there's really no denominations, and many of the practices and the customs and traditions are the same throughout the Christian world with little t traditions that are different. So what I'm going to say we do in the Orthodox Church, you can see that our root system is the same. It's going to echo what Pastor Cione said, all right, with some of the language being a little bit different, how we qualify the days and the events. But then also you're going to see there's definite overlap with the Jewish tradition. And then you also see it later on with from the 6th century moving on with Islam. I'm going to take a little bit different approach as well, because Pastor Cione kind of went from Passover to the Passover meal that Christ celebrated with the apostles and set the tone for why this event takes place. In the book of Genesis, chapters 1 through 11, we see there's three major problems that arise from the Christian point of view. The first is, as we've discussed, and Imam Islam discussed this as well, or in the last episode that we did together, there's the problem of death that enters into the world. The serpent approaches Adam and Eve in paradise, and being envious of God's plan for them in the Orthodox tradition, that's how we understand it, because humanity bore the image and likeness of God. So God's plan for human beings was not the same plan as it was for the angels. He enters into the world and he tempts Eve, and Eve partakes of the fruit. Adam does as well. And as God told them, if you disobey me, then death is going to enter in. And it says that the evil one himself, the curse that he received at this time was he was going to crawl on his belly and eat dirt. Well, as Rabbi has pointed out before, Adam was taken from dirt. So really what the evil one is given at this kingdom is a dirt eater. He is given the kingdom of death. So that he wants to have the rule and be elevated like humanity in the image and likeness of Christ. Eventually, that plan for humanity to grow in their likeness of God, but instead he inherits the kingdom of death. He's gonna eat dirt, in other words, eat dead human beings. That's the imagery. So death is the first thing. Then with Cain, we see that really is no mention of sin in Genesis 1-3. That's not mentioned. That's not mentioned till Cain kills his brother Abel. And we read that sin is crouching at the door, waiting to devour him. And Cain has to make a choice. So when we read a lot of the scriptures later on, we really hammer Cain as much or more than we do Adam and Eve. Okay. So through Cain's disobedience, sin enters into the world, even at a more pronounced level. And it begins to spread rapidly. And Cain's line becomes very problematic with murder coming down later in the line as well. So now you have death, sin, and then at the very end of Genesis chapter 11, you have in Genesis 10, the recording of the 70 nations. And in Genesis chapter 11, they stop in the Valley of Shinar, which is where Nimrod had established kingdoms. And Nimrod was known as a giant, and that giant is a loaded term, Nephilim, some type of demigod type status, if you understand it that way. But he was a tyrant. So this area that's built in modern day Iraq, Babylon, the nations there are dispersed because they're trying to build a ziggurat that would reach the heavens and call down God and control him. And that doesn't take place. God comes down and disperses them across the earth as they were originally supposed to do, multiply, spread, multiply, fill the earth. But if you read over in Deuteronomy chapter 32, verses 8, when those 70 nations were spread across the earth, there were certain angels, sons of God, that were given authority over them in the spiritual realm. But those angels in Deuteronomy 32:8 began to set the worship of the people. And from this, those angels in that sense fell. And so the worship was due to God. They began to take upon themselves. So now you have the third problem, the powers of principalities and darkness. So Genesis 1-11, you have death, sin, and the struggle against powers and principalities of darkness. So God enters into covenant with Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, and he's promised land, seed, and blessing. And in the Christian tradition, especially that of blessing, seed, is fulfilled in the person that would eventually come that we call Jesus or the Christ. So when Christ enters into this world in and through Mary, and this is recorded in the Quran as well, it's a virgin birth, and the God child is raised, and he does visit the synagogue, as Pastor Sione said. He learns the traditions of the Jewish people because, in our sense, he gave that to them. And ultimately, he fulfills all things that was promised that he would do in correcting these issues that we see in Genesis chapter 1-11 through his crucifixion, death, and resurrection. And so for us, we call that the Passion of Christ. And it's through these events that death is conquered as he descends into Hades. The power of sin is overcome because he bears it on himself. And the powers of darkness are defeated. So there's multiple levels to Easter and Pascha in the Orthodox tradition. But the main icon of it, the main picture that we see, is Christ standing on the cross that's situated like an X, and he's pulling Adam and Eve out of the grave, which represents all of humanity. So ultimately, he has rescued us from death by conquering death. And so that becomes the basis for the Christian celebration in the East, the Orthodox Church, of what we call Pascha, which is taken from Passover, where, like Rabbi said, we're delivered from slavery to sin, and ultimately we pass over death. We go from life to death. And there's a lot of imagery and a lot of the things we could talk about here, but our week begins really with Lazarus Saturday. So the first half of Holy Week is taken from Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which we call the Synoptic Gospels. And they tell the story of Christ from different perspectives. and they're written around the 60s, so about 30 years after these events take place. Then the Gospel of John, the theological gospel, is written around 90, maybe a little bit earlier than that, because the Apocalypse is written in. So between 70 and 80, somewhere in that range, it's written a little bit later, but it theologizes a lot of what we're talking about. So the first half of the week, we pull from the Synoptic Gospels. The last half of Holy Week is taken from the Gospel of St. John. Lazarus Saturday is when Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, and that speaks to the universal resurrection. And the ancient tradition, the Jewish tradition, somebody wasn't dead unless they were in the tomb 3 days. So Lazarus is in the tomb 4 days, as we understand it, okay? Then we enter into Palm Sunday, where Christ enters into Jerusalem triumphant, but unlike the great kings of old, he's not on a white stallion. He enters in on lowly and humble, on a donkey or the colt, and the children lay palms before him and cry out, "Hosanna in the highest, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord," fulfilling prophecy and entering into Jerusalem, the city of David. And then on Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we do what is called bridegroom services. We look at Christ as the bridegroom coming for his bride. So there's different emphases that take place each night. And then there's an anointing with oil on Wednesday night. Then we enter into Holy Thursday. And that is the night that we have the scene of the crucifixion. Friday night, we have what we call the lamentations around the tomb. And then we process with the tomb around the church as our procession through Hades or death itself. Then the tomb is placed at the door of the church and everybody walks up to it and goes underneath the tomb. So they go in death with Christ and they come out of the tomb with him. And we enter into the nave and we continue the celebration. Then the next day, there's another service, and then Christ is taken down from the cross at 3 o'clock. Then that night, we do what is called lamentations. He's entombed. The little girls stand around the tomb with flowers, and we sing lamentations. That's the night we do the procession. Then we enter into Saturday. There's the royal hours that morning. And then that night, our actual Pascha celebration starts. I'm getting excited even talking about it. The Pascha celebration starts at 10:30. It goes to about 1:30, 1:45, or 2 in the morning. And then everything goes dark, everything's silent, every candle's blown out. Then the priest steps through the holy doors, representing Christ coming from the tomb with one candle lit. And there's a song that says, "Come receive the light." So all the people come and light their candles. We go and we process around the church, and then we get back to the church. We knock on the doors. It's taken from a psalm. The gates are open. We enter in. All the lights are on. All the doors are open. It smells and looks like paradise. Bells are ringing. And we've seen Christ has risen from the dead, trampling down death upon death, and upon those in the tomb bestowing life. And so we break the fast that we've been in for 50 days. And we enter into the parish hall and we eat and drink till 4 in the morning, 4:30. We find out who's been fasting and who hasn't, because if you don't get really sick, you probably have not been fasting if you don't need to leave quickly after eating meat. And then we come back the next day at 12 o'clock. We do what's called the Agape Vespers, and we celebrate again and we barbecue and we enjoy each other's fellowship. And we greet each other, as a Methodist do as well, quite often, with the term "Christ is risen." The response is, "He is risen indeed," or "Truly he is risen." We say it in all the different languages we can say, and that's kind of a game we play with each other. So there's many more little T traditions that go along with it, but that's how we celebrate Holy Week and Pascha in the Orthodox Church, a condensed version.
I got 3 questions. I don't know who else does. I'll go first, maybe.
Okay.
You said, and I don't know if you meant to be saying these words, but you said freedom to sin. Like you go from freedom to sin. Is that what you meant to say?
Oh, no. Forgive me.
I didn't think so.
We're delivered from sin.
To freedom.
Yeah, and that gives us freedom. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, thank you for that makes more sense. I was trying to say, oh, I never heard that before. No, but no, I mean, it's possible,
we would get emails on that one, Rabbi. So good catch.
So the other one was, you can catch me on mine. The other one was, I'm curious about the tomb that you say. Is it like that you're going under and you're carrying around? What's that like?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's called a kabuklion or bier, okay? And it's like a canopy, almost looks like the
like a chuppah,
the tabernacle in the Old Testament.
Okay, that's what I figured, right?
So, matter of fact, in some of our churches, the tabernacle, really, if you look inside the altar area, it's covered and it's made to look like the tabernacle has come to rest there. Okay,
like the ark.
So inside of it, yeah, it's made out of wood. It's carried in procession, but some people refer to it as the epitaphios, but the epitaphios is actually a shroud that is set inside the tomb. And if you look at it, there is a thing called the Shroud of Turin.
Right.
And
I've heard of that.
If you look at the Shroud of Turin and you look at the epitaphios that we lay in the tomb, there's definitely a connection between the two. Basically, it's Christ entombed. He's laying there. There's angels around. There's other images of other people, but it's like a winding sheet with this image on it and covered in flowers and various things of that nature. Yeah.
And the last question that I don't feel like you answered, or maybe I missed it there, but why is it May 2nd? How is it? What makes it be different than when the let's say Pastor Sione's Easter is?
Yeah, forgive me, because that was the direction I was heading in, and I got so excited.
You got stuck in Genesis. You went backwards and forwards.
Yeah, well, I got so excited by what's about to take place, I forgot the dating. Okay, if you go back in 46 BC, Julius Caesar, he started the calendar, right, the Julian calendar. And so that calendar was in existence until 1582 with Pope Gregory VII changed, and we had the Gregorian calendar, right? And the reason for that, as you said earlier, we were losing days. So the time, in the 16th century when the Gregorian calendar is created, I think it's 10 days off, okay? Nowadays, it's about 13 days off. So in the world that we live in the Orthodox Christian tradition, you have some Orthodox Christians that adopted the new calendar, the Gregorian calendar. So our year is about 13 days off with other Orthodox Christians and other places that still hold what we call the old calendar, the Julian calendar. So during the year, there are different dates, but when you get to the time of the celebration of Pascha, all Orthodox Christians go by the dating that was established by the Council of Nicaea, the Ecumenical Council in 325 AD. And so basically, first Sunday after the full moon of the spring equinox, but it can't be on the same day as Passover. It has to be after it. So Pastor Sione is using the Gregorian calendar to calculate his date. We're using the Julian calendar to calculate our date. And so there's various things that come into play. Sometimes they're on the same day. Sometimes they're, as we are now, a month apart. The only benefit to us right now is we get all the Easter candy at half price.
Yeah, I'm going to say, you got a good deal on that. That was what I was glad about, is I can't eat any of that candy during Passover, but yeah. I get sales now if I want.
But the problem is, I mean,
you can feed it. If you can eat, you can feed it. He can feed the other people.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, get it and feed the other people. That's exactly right. So Easter, but in all traditions, Easter must always be on a Sunday. So yeah. Whatever the sun, the moon, the full moon after the spring full moon, it's always going to have to be on that Sunday.
Now, it's always been my excuse that I fast in the end of the day, but I had to break my fast on Sunday because it's a resurrection day.
That makes sense. The dilemma of Good Friday.
That's the ancient tradition. I mean, right now we fast 40 days and another really 10, even on Sundays. But historically, in the ancient church, people didn't really fast on Sunday. you know.
Yeah.
But we do now. It's one of our major fasting. It's one of the four major fasting periods of the year for us. Yeah.
Ashish has been trying to get in a couple of times there.
All I want to comment was how impressive it was for him to describe entire 10 days of ceremony they do. And basically, I was thinking in my mind how symbolic it is that we all are trying to answer a few questions that we have about life, death, and rebirth, you know, and how in life, you know, we are given scriptures and guidance to how to live life through scriptures. And then how we can be not afraid of death by doing good deeds and good karmas. And then obviously the question of forgiveness comes in, and then we all believe in rebirth. So it's all symbolic, but it fits in the scheme of all different philosophies that there is a different way of expressing the same universal ideas. And I was very impressed with his presentation about how the ceremony takes place. So,
well, thank you. That's very kind. I think what you're saying also is that, you know, what we all say together, while we have our differences, right? And some of them are very stark, and we have a lot of things in common. But what we're all saying from our world traditions is a great apologetic for the existence of the divine. Because this story, like you're saying, is common within all of us, because if we go back far enough, we're going to have the same ancestors and a lot of the same traditions, right? Because we evolve from, you know, these basic people groups that received a lot of these traditions in various ways. So that commonality, I think, speaks as a very strong apologetic for the human memory. And that human memory includes a memory of the divine.
Yeah, the big search is, at the end of the day, I think our common journey is to find the meaning for why we are here, the meaning of life.
Yeah.
And so to find that meaning, we have to go to the source where it comes from to try to squeeze out the sweetness of what that meaning is. And then, you know, it just kind of shaped itself, our common humanity, along to find some sense of why we are here and a purpose of it, because everybody wants some value to our existence, no matter what background or philosophies that we come from. At the end of the day, it is our common need to understand the value of our existence. And so, so therefore, we must go and find the source and try to draw some sense of our purpose here. Otherwise, then life is meaningless if we don't have that sense. And so then we come in there from different road, but we all on the journey. We all on the journey.
Well, this has been an hour that's been filled with really some incredible information and in sharing about Ramadan and Easter and Pascha. And you're right. We're all on a journey. We're all on a journey. And I appreciate each one of you and what you have brought to today. I think it's been real important to be able to see the history and the struggles and the stories and now the celebrations that we live in the 21st century. Thank you so much, all of you. I appreciate it. You've been listening to About Faith on Red River Radio. I hope you enjoyed meeting our guest panel today. If you have any questions that you would like to ask the panel, or have them address it, please email us at redriverradiomail@gmail.com. That's redriverradiomail@gmail.com. And be sure to tune in next week to Red River Radio at 1 p.m. for Illuminations. And don't forget to tune in 2 weeks for conversations about many important topics that we will continue to be talking about as we go forward, looking and learning about the people of faith in our community. This is Marcy Howard with lots more questions about faith. So thank you for being with us today.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Red River Radio, our staff or advisory board, or LSU Shreveport. This program copyright 2021.